Our scripture reading this morning is from Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 7 to 16. Again, I saw something on earth that didn't mean anything. A man lived all by himself. He didn't have any sons or brothers. His hard work never ended, but he wasn't happy with what he had. "Who am I working so hard for?" he asked. "Why don't I get the things I enjoy?" That doesn't have any meaning either. In fact, it's a very bad deal. Two people are better than one. They can help each other in everything they do. Suppose either of them falls down, then the other one can help the other one up. But suppose a person falls down and doesn't have anyone to help them up, then feel sorry for that person. Or suppose two people lie down together, then they'll keep warm. But how can one person keep warm alone? One person could be overpowered, but two people can stand up for themselves, and a rope made out of three cords isn't easily broken. A poor but wise young man is better off than an old but foolish king. That king doesn't pay attention to a warning anymore. The young man might have come from prison to become king, or he might have been born poor within the kingdom, but still became king. I saw that everyone was following the young man who had become the new king. At first, all the people served him when he became king, but those who came later weren't pleased with the way he was ruling. That doesn't have any meaning either. It's like chasing the wind. Pastor Will, I'm looking forward to what you say this morning. I know I've been to some conferences, and one keynote speaker says that all this, like, technology, messaging, Twitter is great. We need to be doing more of it. And the next speaker says, no, we need more face-to-face conversations and relationships. So I'm interested in what you're going to say this morning.
All right. Thanks, Erin. And I will say all of those things. Erin, while you were away, we celebrated your MDS works. And so now that you are here with us, let me say we're proud of the work that you did. And it makes all of us look a little bit better, too, so thank you. This is the last in this sermon series that I've come up with. I've enjoyed going through and analyzing the different parts of the story that we tell each other and pointing out the ways that we need to go beyond that. Being connected is one of the big parts of the story that we tell each other. If we compare our lives to the people who lived a generation ago, two, three, four generations ago, one of the big differences is that we are far more connected. We don't really ever have to say goodbye to anyone. We are still very easily in touch with everybody. And so, when we move across the country, as Anna and I did 7 years ago, we are still keeping in touch with our family very easily, instantaneously, if we want to. And so, being connected is part of the story that we tell, but in some ways, we aren't as connected as we think we are. And so, I'm going to talk a little bit about social media today. And it'll sound like I'm sort of poking fun at the people who use social media a lot, and I may be, but I want to be upfront and honest about this. I use social media a lot, probably more than most of you think that I should. But social media is part of the way that I can communicate what's on my heart. In terms of ministry, but it's also a way that I'm able to see what's happening in other people's lives. And if there's a pastoral issue that comes up on Facebook, as has happened before, before it comes up in my office, then I make a phone call, and things go from there. So, as we're going to look at social media, I just wanted to clarify some of the things that we're talking about. So these are some of the symbols you might recognize. Facebook is the nice little white F in the middle of a blue circle. That one will be pretty easily recognized. To the left of that is Twitter. And then the one on the top left is Instagram, where people share pictures. Twitter is just little snippets, 140 characters at a time. That's what you're limited to. LinkedIn is on the top right. That's where you sort of talk about your professional qualifications in case you're looking for a job or wanting to network with other people with the same job. These are all social media. You see YouTube up there. Most of you have watched YouTube videos probably this week. And it might not seem very social, but there's a part of YouTube that connects you with other friends. Whenever there's a comment section, that becomes a part of social media that you can kind of connect with the people who have posted stuff before. YouTube is very easily connected to other social media platforms and becomes a part of the way that we share our what we're following and what we're reading and viewing. And so YouTube is very much a part of the social media that we're using online. And the thing is that anything that becomes social makes users and viewers more loyal. And so many of you have on your smartphones have downloaded the Bible app. When you look for apps on your phone and you just type Bible, the first one that comes up is the most popular one. And it is also a social app. You can sign in with a username. It'll kind of search through your phone to find out who your friends are. It'll tell you which of those friends are also on the same app. You can do Bible studies together through the app. You can see who's reading, who isn't reading, what they are reading. All of this is social so that you feel more connected, but it also makes you feel more connected to the app and more loyal to the app and more loyal to the company. And it isn't just the Bible app that does this. Many of them do that to keep you connected, to keep you feeling loyal, to keep you coming back, and to keep you viewing and clicking on the advertisements that are there. I did a little bit of research on Facebook use and social media use, and I thought I'd share some of those. 50% of 18 to 24-year-olds go on Facebook before they get out of bed in the morning. Which some of you might think, well, they should be getting up and washing their faces and eating and getting started with their days before they're playing with their phones. Now, from time to time, I'm on social media before I get out of bed. And it's an incredible piece of technology that's available to us. Before I get out of bed, I know what's happening in other parts of the world. I've read the news from other parts of the world. I have seen the things that my friends in various parts of the country are thinking and are concerned about. And my day starts with that sort of daily dose of information. But this is unique to heavy social media users. This isn't everybody. And when you start your day in that way, it takes on a very different feel than if you're not doing that. Another statistic. Connecting as easily as I thought here. On average, 5 new Facebook profiles are created every second of every day. It seems sometimes that Facebook should be full, right? Everybody that you know has it. Who else is going to have it now? But there are new people. That means new content. That means new customers and subscribers all the time. But also, there are an estimated 83 million fake Facebook profiles. Just a little while ago, I got an email asking if I was interested in speaking at a conference. They had read my online profile, and they were excited to learn about all of the things that I had studied, and would I come and speak on my expertise. It sounded exciting. It was in England. I could have gone over there. But there were a lot of flags that suggested to me that this was not what it was presented to be. First of all, the subject that they wanted me to speak on wasn't at all one of my expertise. They said they had read the profile on our church website. There isn't a profile of me on the church website. There should be one, so we'll put one there soon. But it became clear that they are misrepresenting themselves. And there's a lot of this online. And people who are using social media become pretty savvy at discovering who is real, who's a real person. And partly what they're after. So some people are there to generate fake interest. Some people are there to generate fake controversy. And some people are there to take advantage of the personal information that people are sharing. There's a lot of fake things on Facebook. But despite all of this, all of the ways that 18 to 24-year-olds are using Facebook, Facebook has been losing market share in this demographic. And 18 to 24-year-olds, and you can ask them, but they're leaving Facebook. In alarming numbers, if you work for Facebook anyway. And if you ask them, they will give you the reasons. Now, you might think, well, maybe they've come to realize that it's not a good use of time, that it interferes with their productivity, or that it just is another avenue for advertisements and they want to use their time better. No, that's really not it at all. There are security issues in terms of identity theft and information that's shared can be used against them if you're not careful what you use. Privacy issues. A lot of people's pictures that they put on Facebook have appeared in other places on the internet in advertisements without that person getting credit or royalties or whatever. But also, too many of you are on Facebook, which seems a little bit insulting. But social media is, at least for most of its history, has been used for people to talk about all of the fun things that they're doing. And 18 to 24-year-olds sometimes have the kinds of fun that they don't want their parents and grandparents to know about. And so they use other social media avenues to talk about that kind of fun, and they save their Facebook stuff for the more publicly digestible material. All of this is happening on Facebook. All of this is happening behind the scenes that we really aren't entirely aware of. Also, 66% of Facebook users consume news via Facebook. The estimate was that roughly 80% of that same 18 to 24-year-old age category uses Facebook as the primary source of their news. The primary source of the way that they get the information about what's happening in politics and in entertainment and anything that's happening in the world is through Facebook. And so a few years ago, when there was a political uprising in part of the Arab world, a lot of it happened because of Facebook. And the company was very proud of what they were able to accomplish. If there was going to be a public demonstration against one of the dictators in Tunisia or Egypt or any of those countries there, it was on Facebook. People would go there, they'd see it, they would share it, and very quickly everybody who wanted to be there saw that it was happening, and very quickly a million people could show up in downtown Cairo to demonstrate something. And many of these leaders lost their positions because of it. And many speculate that because of all of the uprisings that happened, Bashar al-Assad, who's the second from the right in the picture, the leader of Syria, started cramping down even harder to suppress the political uprisings that Facebook made possible. And that led to and added fuel to the flames of the Syrian civil war. And so Facebook is often blamed for the distribution of fake news. And that word means a lot of things to a lot of people. But there are a lot of websites that are trying to look real. And they are copying the format of regular, professional, regulated media sources. But they have information that's not at all true and just serves to feed a particular political purpose. And so all of this is distributed very easily. Nobody at Facebook is saying, well, that article isn't correct, so we're not going to share it. Nobody stops it, and it just goes everywhere. And so that's when people are getting their news that way, it interferes with their sense of reality. A little while ago, I saw this video on YouTube. This is, they had a, The premise of this was that there was a mind reader, and they were going to make a TV show of his incredible magical abilities to read people's minds. And so they gathered random people off of the street. They got them to sign some sort of waiver, and they would come into this tent with the mind reader, and he would talk to them, and then he would sort of get visions, and then he would explain to them, you have a friend named Julie, right? And he would explain to them, I'm getting a picture of your house. It's white and red around the windows. And the people would be astounded that he could tell these things. And he's talking to this woman. You might be able to read the caption. It's translated. The video is made in Belgium, so they were using a lot of different languages. He says, "Do you know your bank account number? Like, do you have it memorized?" And she said, "Yeah, I do." And he started telling her the bank number. And she's losing her mind, right? Who is this guy? Where is he getting this power from? And then as the interview or the meeting is just about to end, the walls of the tent come down. And you can see in the adjacent tent, there are a bunch of guys with laptops gathering information about the person. All of the things that he had been saying had been fed to him through an earpiece by these people scrolling through social media, just doing Google searches of who these people are. And by doing that, he was able to get a sense of their relationship history, their work history, their banking information, their health issues. All of this is available, and most of the time because we put it out there. It becomes a little bit dangerous in that way. So what is it that brings us into that space? What is it that makes us share that kind of information? Well, partly it's because we feel that it's a safe place, a safer place than it actually is. But part of it, too, is that it is a social space. And so in social space, we feel comfortable and we want to be received as social people. So just yesterday, we were hiking in Kananaskis country, and it was beautiful, the mountains around us. We hiked up, there were wildflowers, there were little animals, a nice little stream trickling through. Everything was fantastic. And yet, one of my first instincts was, I have to take the right pictures so that I can share them on social media so that people know that I was here. And I'm sort of over-analyzing my thought process. But part of that mindset is I want people to know that I'm the kind of guy who does outdoorsy stuff, that I'm the kind of guy who appreciates the beauty of nature, and that I'm athletic. I'm not really. I had a lot of trouble climbing that hill. But all of these things are parts of the persona that I'm putting out there. And I'm doing that so that people will feel more comfortable with me. And feel more drawn to be with people like me because I have my stuff together. And so, as we kind of think about that quest to be social, these passages come to mind. So Aaron read this already. This is earlier on, verse 8. And so the old man that the writer of Ecclesiastes is viewing asks, "For whom am I toiling? Who am I working for? Who am I doing all of this for when it's just me?" Right? When we have other people, then we are working for them. And a lot of us channel our social instincts into our careers and become successful for that. Others of us have social instincts that we channel into hobbies and interests and volunteer activities. And the church is richer for that. And yet, here is this picture of a man who has no one to work for. And it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind, vanity, whatever your translation of Ecclesiastes uses. But, as Aaron was saying before too, we are created to be in fellowship with other people from the very beginning. This is in the very first chapter of the Bible, the creation account, what motivates God to create humanity. So, then God says, let us, right? Already God is speaking first person plural, let us. God is already community. God is, as we understand, three persons in one. So when God says, let us, God, Jesus, the Holy Spirit working together, and together with the angels, let us create. So let us make humanity in our image. Our image. We aren't simply the discarded creation of the other origin narratives that have come from other religious groups. We are copies. We are duplicates of God's image. God is already community embodied. And so we are created in that same image. So God created humanity in God's own image. In the divine image, God created them. Male and female, God created them. Already, community was in God's mind when we were created. And then later on in chapter 2, it says that God looked upon Adam and said that it wasn't good that he was alone. He was just in the garden. He had nothing to do, no one to interact with. It isn't good for us to be alone. And that's not just in a romantic sense. It's not good for us to shut ourselves off from the rest of society. And it's not good for the rest of society to shut us out either. So there's a dual challenge there. Another passage that came to mind was this one from Matthew chapter 18. Many of us will be familiar with the last verse there. For wherever two or more are gathered, right? For where two or three are gathered in my name, I am there with them. Right? Jesus has promised when we, his followers, gather together to worship, to reflect on God, to teach each other, to build each other up, then God himself will be with us. It's a beautiful promise. It also connects back, I think, to Genesis chapter 1 of us being created for community. But it comes after a passage in Matthew 18 that has been uncomfortable for many of our ancestors in church history. Matthew 18 talks about how people within the church should correct each other when problems arise, when we find sin in other people. Because we, being humans, want to create spaces of perfection, and the ways that we think we can do that is by getting rid of the imperfect people. And so the church has in the past used this as justification. When people sin and aren't willing to admit it and fix it on their own, then we get rid of them. But that's not at all what Jesus was getting at. That is part of it, but Jesus wants us to approach with humility, with love, with the goal being reunification, reconciliation. And so when we find someone who is in error, then we approach them not to demonstrate our righteous anger towards them, but to demonstrate to them our desire to be built back up closer together. Because when we do that, we model God's heart. And at the close of that concept, Jesus says, when you gather together, I am there with you. When you are getting together, motivated by love of each other, motivated by love of God, I will be there with you. We are designed to be social. We are designed for God to be with us in our social efforts. So I struggled for a while to picture what this social TV show might look like. If Mennonites were going to make a TV show pointing out the flaws of the unsocialness of our society, what would that look like? And as I was thinking about that, I thought about this this movie called Inside Out. Some of you have seen it. A while ago, I prescribed it as homework, sort of for fun. It's a great movie. The story is there's an 11-year-old girl, and throughout her life she interacts with friends, and she has difficulties and she has joys, and all the while the emotions in her head are reacting. But the emotions in her head are these five characters. And it's a really fun way to look at our mental thought process. And so the female character in the middle was joy, and there's anger and disgust and fear and sadness. And I thought this might be a good premise for this social show. So the social show would follow maybe one person, maybe a group of people around. But as they interact with the world around them, there would be a Facebook character in their head, maybe a Twitter character, an Instagram character, all of these little characters in their head that would be feeding them messages. So when they go for a hike, like I did, then the Instagram character would say, hey, make sure you get good pictures. And the Facebook character would say, hey, remember, there's got to be a quote. You find a quote to put with this so that people think you're smart. Right? And all of these little voices would just keep jabbing and interrupting the experience. But there would also be a character of the regular human emotion. And so here, this person would be hiking, and the regular human emotional response character would just be marveling at how beautiful the mountains are. And he would be saying, look around you, look at the shades of blue that you see. Listen to the sound of the wind blowing through those leaves. But that voice would be interrupted. That voice would be interrupted by the social media. And there might also be a spiritual character. And the spiritual character might say, yeah, the scene that you're looking at, God painted it for you. Each of the flowers that you are looking at, God gave them life for this moment so that you could see this. Isn't God's creation beautiful? And then Instagram. Yeah, make sure you capture some of this beauty. And maybe you can put a little spiritual quote. That'll really draw in the followers. See, it's easy for us to poke fun of the people who are using Facebook wrong or the people who are using it too much. The big problem, one of the big problems with Facebook is actually quite counterintuitive. That Facebook doesn't really actually connect us with other people as much as it connects us with advertisers. Because it's actually quite expensive to maintain a website like Facebook. All of the information that we keep on there takes up data storage space, and then to call up old videos, that takes a lot of processing power. All of that takes a lot of money to create that processor space, the data space, and then to keep that building cooled properly, because all of that generates a lot of that takes a lot of money. And so every time you like something, every time you share something, it is analyzed, and then somebody who's advertising says, oh, hey, this person likes going on outdoor adventures, let's give them some advertisements about hiking shoes. They might click on that. And so when we think we're connecting with other people, we are actually being fed advertisements that interfere with that. The other thing is that we think we are connecting with other people, but we are really only connecting with ourselves. You see, when you talk to somebody, there's give and take, and they object, and they suggest other ideas, or they say, wow, I really like that thing that you said, or wow, that hike must have been beautiful, tell me more about it. But in Facebook, the algorithms work to feed back what you already believe. And so most of us don't actually hear new news on Facebook. We hear from voices that we already agree with. And they tell us things that we already agree with because the algorithm knows that that's what we will like, that's what we will share, and that's what will drive more advertising revenue. And so when we surround ourselves with only our own voices and our own likes, we are not being as social as we think we are. But that isn't just limited to social media. This is the way that a lot of us interact with our world. The temptation is for us to only spend time with people who we already mostly agree with, the people who already care about us, the people who already care about the same things that we care about. But this isn't the kind of world that God envisioned. This isn't the kind of world that Jesus called us to live into. So when we see someone in error, like Jesus suggested in Matthew 18. Jesus wanted us to approach them humbly, to ask them about that event. If they weren't repentant, bring in another witness and say, hey, this person is also concerned about that. Can we talk about that more? And then if they still won't, then get a bigger group together and say, listen, we are all concerned about this. Right? The desire is for unity. The natural instinct and the social media instinct is to say, well, I don't want to be connected to this person anymore. And you unfriend them, you unfollow them, you block them, and you don't have to hear those uncomfortable stories anymore. So all of us are using our social media, our interactions with other people in ways that really only feed ourselves, whether we're on computers or not. So the challenge, I believe, for us is to be social in a way that benefits us by hearing new voices and that benefits other people so that we can build each other up and become the kind of community that God is calling us into. So may we be, model a healthier version of ourselves, not so that other people will like us more, but so that other people will be drawn to us so that we can benefit from them and that so we can benefit them and their stories as well. May God walk with us through our relationships and through our interaction with the world around us. Amen.